Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Anyway, time to look at stories from other parts of the world. Once again, we're joined by Jonathan DeBurka Butler, who turns out is a close personal friend of O.J. Simpson, or at least saw him once in the distance. Jonathan, good afternoon. Right, India, we're going to go to first, and this is an astonishing and appalling story. 30 kids die.
Yes, for no reason other than commerce, really, I suppose, to be honest with you. This happened in the northern province of Uttar Pradesh, which seems to come up quite a bit on this particular slot. And it happened on last Thursday and Friday, okay, so in the middle of the night. So basically, the hospital ran out of oxygen, and as a result, these 30 children died. There's, as you can imagine, a lot of controversy around it, and there's various different state bodies saying it was somebody else's fault, and everybody's grappling to try and get out of the way if such a thing is possible. The Home Ministry have said that at least 21 of the 30 deaths were directly linked to the shortage of oxygen. Okay, the people who supplied the oxygen said that the hospital itself owed nearly $90,000. Okay. To them, to the people who supplied the oxygen. They said that the deal was that they had a limit, a kind of a credit limit, I suppose, of nearly $16,000. They wrote to them and to magistrates, basically trying to get them to pay. Nobody responded, or at least they didn't get paid. And the deal ended on July 31st. They ran out of oxygen on August the 4th, and the tragedy happened.
And had the hospital alerted anyone to the fact that they were just about to run out of oxygen?
It seems that everybody was alerting them, and there was even the people who were, who were supposed, the employees who handled the storage plant, told their superiors that this is going to run out on Thursday evening. Now, another section of the hospital said that they had got sufficient backup supplies from a nearby nursing home, and they said they thought, you know, that would be sufficient. But clearly, somebody has done something very badly wrong here.
Is there something perhaps suspect about the way this hospital is being run in general?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. There is another aspect to it, that since in the last couple of months, 60 children have died for various different reasons. Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, you've always got to take in the size of this country into consideration and how busy these places are. So the focus has now landed on it as a result of this single tragedy, and there could be no doubt about that. And really, because of that, as I said, various different state bodies are saying, well, look, we did this and we said we were going to do that and we told them. But one man has been arrested. It's the hospital manager has been arrested and he's being investigated. Mm-hmm. So he looks like he's the first person who's going to be held responsible, or at least he's being investigated for it. But it's unbelievably tragic, and I mean, it's avoidable, you would imagine.
Yeah, and this all, it seemed from, it all happened last Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, like in the space of three hours. Yeah. And the oxygen was running out in front of their parents' faces. And so there was masks being handed out, you know, resuscitation masks being handed out. How nobody knew this was going to happen. But as I said, people are saying we did know and we told people, but they just didn't listen.
That's extraordinary. Right, China we're going to go to next, and this is a bizarre one. A man's been detained for transporting arms.
Yes, and not the type of thing you shoot people with, arms that are attached to bodies. Two of them. And a 50-year-old man, we only know his surname, Mr. Zheng. And he was detained in a bus station in the southeast of the country, in a place called Duyan. Okay, it's a population of about 500,000 people. It's not particularly big. But he was detained because authorities sort of scanned his case in this bus station, and they noticed that there was arms in it. They arrested him straight away, suspecting that he had been involved in a murder somehow. But he explained to them that he was actually carrying the arms for his brother, who was the victim of some sort of an accident, and had asked for his help to transport these arms back to him. Now, the authorities didn't believe this man, but they got in touch with the hospital where the brother's arms had been amputated. And they said, yeah, this is, he went through this procedure, he was in an accident, and he obviously wants the arms back, because when he dies, they will be buried with him, because it's part of the tradition that the body be buried as complete as it possibly can be.
Yeah. Why were the arms put in a bag in the first place? When the arms are amputated, why didn't they just keep them on site?
I've no idea. I really don't know. I mean, they had to be carried back. Obviously, the brother went ahead of him or something, and he asked his other brother to put it into a bag. I mean, it's a kind of handy way of carrying them, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of odd that presumably there are regulations about taking arms out of a hospital.
There are, and this is what has baffled people online, apparently. So there's some people have pointed out that, you know, medical authorities are supposed to actually have signed permission slips in order to be carrying limbs around the place. Mm. But you would have thought that he could have just produced this document if he had one, but apparently he didn't. They got in touch with the hospital anyway. The hospital said, yeah, they're legitimate. Maybe he forgot the documents or something. Anyway, he's been released, and the explanation has been taken as a good explanation.
Yeah. We were wondering where we put them, and a million other terrible jokes. Right, Australia we're going to now, and this is a rape case, and it involves a claim, at least, of mistaken identity.
Yes, this happened in 2013. A group of friends had gathered for a baby shower. Their boyfriends and husbands joined them later on. Everybody had a bit too much to drink, and that... I'm saying that because it's actually an important part of the defence.
Yeah, it's part of the legal, yeah.
And it's interesting what they've come up with. And around 1 a.m. that night, a woman came out screaming that somebody else's slime ball boyfriend was raping her. He was arrested, and he, in the first case, said that he thought the victim was his girlfriend.
Yeah.
The jury didn't believe him, but he went back and appealed. And he appealed on various different bases. He basically said that it was an honest and reasonable but mistaken belief. And he said that he was so intoxicated that he didn't know where he was going. Now, the appeal court basically said that in this case, intoxication can't be used as an excuse. So we're throwing that out. Basically, we're treating you as sober, okay? Because these types of cases are always treated as if someone is sober. There's different types of cases. Specific intent is like murder and that kind of thing. And in those cases, alcohol consumption can actually be taken into consideration, okay? But in this, because it's not a crime of specific intent, the New South Wales Appeals Court said, nope, we're not giving you the chance to argue the case on that basis.
All right.
So the second one was that he said, well, because she was my girlfriend, I assumed that, you know, consent was granted, even if it wasn't specifically granted. And they said, no, that just because you're going out with someone or married to someone, it can't be assumed that consent is given. Mm. So they threw it out on that basis. And he also claimed that the victim herself, the old one, that she was drunk, and so that the jury in the first case shouldn't have necessarily have believed her. And the appeals court said, no, it's the jury's decision whether they want to believe her or not. And they threw that out.
Yeah.
So the appeal has been thrown out on all those bases, and he goes to prison for between 3 years or 6 years. I don't think the term hasn't been decided yet.
But presumably that changes the legal precedent. If there had been a previous one where inebriation was seen as some sort of defence in this case.
Yeah, so he was using a decision that was made in Queensland where which was kind of extraordinary, that inebriation may help to induce a belief that a woman is consenting to intercourse. So the New South Wales appeals, the judges, it was a three-judge panel in the appeal, basically said, no, in New South Wales, we're not going to use that. And they used, quite cleverly, that law of specific intent.
Yeah. Wow. Argentina, we're going to next. And protests there. What are the protests over?
Yeah, so this was August the 1st when a young man, a 28-year-old Santiago Maldonado, went missing. He was at a protest sticking up for, or at least protesting for, a group of Mapuche Indians. Now, these Mapuche Indians, they live down in Patagonia. There's about 1.5 million of them on the Chilean side of the border, and there's about 200,000 on the Argentinian side. So they're not a small ethnic group, okay? Mm. They're a considerable ethnic group. Anyway, they've been in various different land claims and land battles with various different organisations, and one of those is with Benetton. So Benetton have sheep that are grazing on land that these Mapuche Indians claim. They've occupied it since 2015, and last week or earlier in this month, police came in and they removed them forcibly. And this guy, Santiago Maldonado, was thrown into the back of the van and he hasn't been seen since. So people are extremely concerned that he is no more, effectively. And a couple of thousand people took to the streets of Buenos Aires and are looking for his safe return. But most of them believe that that's not going to happen.
Yeah, is it clear that the van he was thrown into the back of was a police van?
Yeah, it was a police van. It was the border police who were looking after this. There was about 100 of them and they went over the top. There was plastic bullets and the like were being fired around the place as well. So the government are in behind the protesters as well. They've come under pressure from the United Nations to look into it. So the government have actually put up a reward. There's been no statement from the police so far as such, but it would appear that investigations are ongoing and that they will try to get to the bottom of this, because there's a lot of political weight behind it. You know, these women of the disappeared who've gathered in Buenos Aires for years, they're big now politically and they're now in behind this, and they're saying that if we have a return to this Argentina of the dictatorship, it's a very worrying path, you know. So they're getting people thinking about this police state type thing, it's getting people interested, at least.
It is kind of worrying, though, if the government say, was put into a police van, but we don't know where he is.
Yeah. Well, they're clearly looking to the local border police down there, which is, you know, a couple of thousand miles away from where they are in Buenos Aires. And they're saying, this is on you to sort out. That's where it stands at the moment.
Right. The United States we're going to now. And this is a story about the Mormons. Apparently their leader's gone.
One of them. This is a man who was involved in the Quorum of the 70. So that's, I suppose, like the conclave that votes for the Pope or whatever you call it. And his name is James J. Hamula. We have no idea why he was kicked out of the church. He's been excommunicated, and it doesn't happen very often. We only know from the statement that was issued on the 8th of August that it was not because of disillusionment or apostasy. So it must be for something else. Now, the last time somebody was kicked out of this particular church was in 1989. That was a Native American by the name of George P. Lee. And he called Mormon leaders racist. He might have had a bit of a point, but he was one of the top guys there. And before that was a man called Richard Lyman, and who was kicked out for adultery in 1943. So it does not happen to the top brass very often. So yeah, it must be something very bad, but we don't know. And believe me, I've been trying to find out.
Right. And it's the internet. It's awash with speculation as to what this kind of thing might be. But presumably then Mormons are somewhat horrified or abashed or worried about this.
Well,
given this is such a rare event.
Yeah, it's rare, all right. But there's been an increase, I think, in, let's call them ordinary but vocal Mormons being excommunicated from the church. So there was a lady by the name of Kate Kelly who was kicked out in January 2014 because she was advocating the ordination of women. And there was another guy, John Dellen, I think his name was, who was kicked out in February of 2015. So even though they weren't officially top brass, these were well-known Mormons who were excommunicated for saying what they believed around the ordination of women, or, you know, the involvement of gay people in the Mormon community and so on.
Yeah, so they're still kind of holding the line on that one. Is it still, is Mormonism still basically Utah and nowhere else, or is it spread a bit?
No, it's spread quite a bit, and that's, in fact, the majority of it is outside of the United States, as far as I know now. A lot of it is based in South America. And actually, just going back to that racist point, up until 1978, if you were black, you couldn't become a lay preacher. But they had a problem in that they were going down to places like Brazil, and they noticed that the skin tone was quite dark in Brazil, and a lot of mixed race, obviously, as well, and a lot of black people. So they changed that around about 1978 in order to accommodate their growing numbers.
Okay, well, they might notice at some point that there are a lot of women and gay people in the world.
Absolutely.
As well. Right, Kurdistan we're going to next, and a referendum.
Yes, that is taking place on the 25th of September, and it promises to be big news. The Americans don't want it to happen, and they are pleading with the Kurds to say, let's not go ahead with this. So this is Barzani, who is some operator, I have to say. He's the president of Iraqi Kurdistan, which has basically become an autonomous state in an area where literally everybody around them can't stand them, hates them.
Yeah.
You know, there's Kurds in Turkey, Iran, Syria, Iraq, and they are just despised really by all of these governments. So for that reason, they've been looking for independence for a long time, and they're going to vote on it on September the 25th. The US are saying, look, there's other things that we need to do. We have more urgent priorities, such as getting rid of Islamic States, Islamic State. Islamic State are effectively gone, but there's a little bit of them left. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that little bit not being tampered with too much, because as long as the United States is in there behind the Kurds, the Kurds have
some leverage. Well, everybody
needs
the Kurds because they're the most effective fighting force.
Yeah,
in that
and
region.
If an Islamic State go, that's when the United States pull out of supporting the Kurds, and that means no more leverage for the Kurds. And as many countries in Africa discovered after the fall of the Berlin Wall, things change and human rights abuses all of a sudden are discovered when the United States don't want to support you anymore. So the Kurds have been burned by the United States before, back in 1991. I don't think they're going to do it again. They're going ahead with this. And they're saying, basically, if everybody else is allowed to be independent, why can't we be independent? We're taking the referendum and we will endeavour to negotiate with our regional partners to come up with the best solution. And that includes Baghdad, of course.
Yeah.
And because they would be taking land from Iraq, effectively.
Yeah, well, and probably Iraq couldn't do much about it anyway.
Exactly.
But Turkey wouldn't be too pleased
Not
about
at all.
It in a major way.
In a very big way. And they would have to be the major concern there, because just to the west of, you know, this proposed new state, you've got Turkmen and the Kurds who are basically fighting it out from northern Syria. And when that ends, then you're looking at trouble. The only thing is there's a lot of Turkish investment in Iraqi Kurdistan as well. So there's a lot at stake here.
Yeah, though I suppose from the Turkish point of view, it could be argued to them this is the acceptable face of Kurdish nationalism, as opposed to the many bomb attacks, etc., that have taken place within Turkey, and it's best to deal with it rather than trying to erase it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Then again, there is that danger. It would mean, though, that Kurdistan would expand its borders into Turkey.
Yeah, and into northern Syria, which I think a certain person within Turkey has his eye on, undoubtedly.
Right. Okay. Then again, Kurdistan would be landlocked, no matter what size or shape it is. So it is dependent upon all those countries around it to help them.
Yeah.
Interesting one. Yeah. All right. Right. Italy, we're going to now. And MSF is suspending rescues.
It is. It's saying that it can no longer, rescue migrants that are in the Mediterranean.
Yes. Sorry.
Because it feels that it's the people who volunteer for them are in danger. So the Italian government, who are under enormous domestic pressure, have brought in new rules which basically require an Italian police officer to be on the ships of these NGOs, okay? Mm. And they're also saying that the NGOs, if they save migrants, they have to bring them back to port. They can't hang around, put them onto bigger ships and then go out and save more people. At the same time, the Libyan government, or one of the Libyan governments, has told the NGOs to stay away from the coastline. Now, this is a big change, because they used to be able to come in within about 10 miles of the coastline. But now they're being told to stay out. And it appears that the Italian government are encouraging the Libyans in this policy as well, right? The Italians are trying to, or at least the Italian government are trying to say that this migration problem, the way we're going to look at it from now on, is that it's actually fueling the illegal transportation of migrants. And that's the way they're spinning it, okay? The NGOs are, of course, saying, no, we're saving people. Mm. But either way, the Italians want to put a stop to it. So MSF, to cut a long story short, saying they're cancelling their rescues.
Right, okay. So the Italians are essentially arguing the very presence of MSF or perhaps other NGO ships are encouraging people to try and take that route.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, from everything I've read in Libya, which is completely and utterly chaotic, and the Libyan Coast Guard, they're putting people on the boats. They're not trying to prevent them. Because they don't want them to stay in Libya either.
There's now a deal which has been struck up in the last couple of months or weeks even, I think, with the Italian government, who are helping the Libyan Coast Guard, or one of the governments at least.
Yeah.
To train and to get it together. Now, what that means, helping them to train, probably means we're giving you a few quid as well.
Yeah.
To do this properly and to get it right.
Right, Saudi Arabia we're going to now, and a man has been arrested for on a very serious charges.
Yes, dabbing.
Oh my God.
Which is that thing that pop stars do, apparently. It makes you look like you're smelling your armpits.
Yeah.
Abdallah Al-Shahani.
And the sons of politicians, American politicians do it too.
Apparently so. Yeah, it's become very popular. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is Abdallah Al-Shahani. He's an actor and TV host, and he was performing at a festival in Saudi Arabia, and he was caught on YouTube doing this, and he was arrested. The Saudi Arabians don't like people doing this because they think it references the drugs culture. Which maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But
I don't think it does, but I
they seem
know.
To think it does, but maybe they're too at the drugs themselves and they're getting a bit paranoid.
What potential? He's been arrested.
But he's made an apology now, and I did try and see if there's going to be any, you know, if he's going to serve any jail time or anything like that. But it doesn't look like it at the moment.
Okie dokie. Right, a few things to look forward to in the coming week. We were actually already talking about Big Ben earlier in the show, but what else is going to be happening?
Yeah, so there'll be a total solar eclipse then on August the 21st.
Wow.
So that could be
visible from this part of the world?
I think so. I'm not sure. A lot of it from what I saw was that it'll be in the United States. It'll be visible from. But anyway, we'll watch out for that. Angela Merkel. And the reason I'm pointing to this, Angela Merkel is travelling to the Rhineland and northwestern city of Bremen to start campaigning. So the German elections are coming up in mid to late September, I think it is. And they promise to be very interesting indeed. And then on August 21st in Switzerland, Co-op are going to put their first insect burgers on sale. So they promise to be very tasty.
Yes, they do. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us. Jonathan DeBrugge Butler there, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.